This episode of Storyworthy is brought to you in part by Bezo.com. Bezo is a shopping and style inspiration site that allows you to shop for tens of millions of products from thousands of stores and brands. And Bezo now has a free app available. So put that on your smartphone, you hipsters. Head on over to Bezo.com.
Hey, you guys, this is Christine Blackburn, and I wanted to thank each and every one of you for listening to Storyworthy. Our numbers have gotten better and better each month, and it's because of fans like you. So tell your friends and family, your coworkers, to listen to the Storyworthy podcast, and then we can keep the shows coming. Now let's get to it.
Hi, it's Mike Siegel from FunnyMike.com and the Travel Tales podcast. You are listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from Grandma's USA Cafe in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin.
Of course we are. What is that, a town? Wisconsin Rapids?
Yes, Wisconsin Rapids. It's near a river somewhere in Wisconsin. I'm not sure which river it is, quite frankly. But let's look out the window of our mobile van. There it is. You can see it.
Do we assume that a grandma's restaurant is good because it has grandma in the title? Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I also picked this because, as it turns out, I found out our guest today, born in Port Washington, Wisconsin.
Oh, my gosh. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
I used to go to Port Washington all the time as a kid.
Mike Siegel.
The Newport News of Wisconsin.
Really?
Without all the yachting and the money. But other than that, it's just like Newport News, Virginia.
Well, Mike Siegel brings forth the topic grandmas, and I could have sworn he was from Chicago.
Well, yes, he moved to Chicago when he was 4 years old, so he remembers nothing. But he's got cheese in his blood, I can tell, because he moves very slowly. He can hardly get up.
So the topic tonight is grandmas. We've all had grandmas. I knew one of my grandmothers, but my other grandmother passed away before I was born. My mother's mother was 42 years old. One day she had a headache. She says to my mother, she says, "Lillian, I have a headache." Mm-hmm. My mom says, "Well, you know, sit down in the chair." And she says, "It just feels like my head is filling with blood." So my mom called an ambulance and she went to the hospital and she'd had a brain aneurysm because her head was filling with blood.
So she was
she died.
She was a genius.
42.
She was really in touch with her own body. That's what I'm getting
right. She self-diagnosed herself right there on the sofa, died right there in the ambulance.
Damn. My 42. Grandfather died when my dad was 12, so I have no idea what he is like.
Right.
But, yeah.
So you have a living grandmother, though.
No, I have. At the moment, both my grandmothers are deceased. At the moment. Like, they're going to be resurrected momentarily. No, I did grow up with both my grandparents. However, my grandma, my dad's mom, lived in Milwaukee, and I saw her all the time. But my mother's mother, I never referred to as grandma. I called her Oma because in grandma and grandpa in German is Oma and Opa.
Right.
And so that was, so it's like the idea that people would have to distinguish between, like, took me a long time to get the other kids would be going, "Oh, I went to see grandma Nana, but then I went to see, you know, Illinois grandma." And they're like, "What the fuck are you talking about? Why are they both called grandma?" It didn't make no sense to me. I thought everybody's.
So you weren't really a bright child.
No, this is about 26 before I figured this out.
No, I'm kidding. So you called your grandparents different things.
Yeah.
Did you have good relationships with them?
Yeah. No, my grandma was exactly what you... Now, this is a great story. Okay, so my grandma's name was Irma Finney. But as it turns out, Irma was her middle name. And so her real first name and her maiden name, she was actually Cleo St. Clair. Which sounds very exotic, like a flapper of some kind.
Cleo St. Clair.
Her maiden name was St. Clair. So when she got married, then she became Irma Finney, which just couldn't be more of a grandma name if you tried.
Yeah, who wouldn't want to be Cleo St. Clair?
You know, she was out there with F. Scott Fitzgerald and Zelda as Cleo St. Clair, and next thing you know, she's Irma Finney.
Now, see, my grandmother, my father's mother, and the only grandmother I knew, you know, she was just old, and she was tiny and small, and she only got smaller, and she smoked constantly, and Jesus was all over the house, and she said a lot of prayer cards, she said a lot of novenas, and a lot of Jesus everything.
Yeah.
And it was always like a chore to go to her house. We didn't want to go to her house. You know, we had to go after church. So it made Sundays like a 3-hour disaster.
Yeah, I can only imagine. My grandmother was religious, but we never discussed, my family wasn't, so we never discussed it.
I don't want to be that kind of grandma. Like, if I'm ever a grandma, I want to be like the cool grandma.
No, you're
going
to be the Helen Mirren grandma. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. Yeah. My grandmother also, she made cookies a lot, which I respect.
Yes. And you do that now. You didn't inherit that.
I got that from her. But one time I said I liked her ginger snaps, and then she nailed me for that. Like, that was the only cookie I ever got.
That you ever got.
Which I really didn't like that much. I just said it that one time. And then my sister said she liked pineapple cookies, and then she got slammed with a pineapple cookie.
I know. They do. Because I think it's because kids respond so little to adults that when they finally actually bother to say something.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, it's like, oh, you're the gingerbread kid.
Well, I'm going to tell my daughter to start telling her elders that she likes a nice Chardonnay.
Yeah, or that she enjoys $100 bills.
And my grandmother lived right on top of these railroad tracks, literally 3 or 4 feet from the tracks. So you could throw from her like window, you could throw a penny out onto the tracks. It was a very...
And it would get smushed.
Very awesome. Old house. It was like a little old saloon. It had been a saloon in the early 1900s.
Sounds awesome.
I'm not kidding you. And when the train went by, the whole freaking house shook. The whole house. I can hear it. I could still hear it.
So this is... Your grandparents lived like in Annie Hall.
Under the roller coaster. Yeah, in Allison Park, Pennsylvania. The house is torn down now.
By the way, I just want to say about my grandmother, she always lived in basement apartments.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Now, but the beautiful part of a basement apartment in the Midwest, our guest can back me up later, is that they are huge.
Oh, really?
Like, you have these windows, and all you see is people's feet going by. Just like in Laverne and Shirley, they lived in a basement because they are the size of the entire building.
Yeah.
So she lived in these giant apartments with no light.
Oh, my gosh. But, it sounds horrible.
But they were giant. I realize now, even I remember thinking, why is Grandma's apartment twice the size of our apartment? It
and
made no sense.
And how did she die, Hannes? How did she die?
She died of natural causes. She was like 86 or so.
Okay, my grandmother smoked every day for at least 50 or 60 years, smoked constantly cigarettes, did not die of the lung cancer, dies of the Alzheimer's when she's about 88.
Yeah. It's like
the last time I saw her in the nursing home, she said, you know, what's your name? I said, hi, Grandma, it's Christine. And then she said, I want to go outside. And I said, well, we can't go outside now, Grandma. And then she said, what's your name? So then that was it. It was perpetual from there on.
Yeah,
it was
apparently
never...
my Oma got Alzheimer's at the end, which since I didn't speak German, I would never have noticed. I have to say, this is a good story about my grandma. So I'm in my 20s. I go with my mom to Germany. And I'm in the house with just my grandparents. They don't speak English. My German is terrible. We cannot communicate. And she's like trying to help me out. She's like, oh, you know, I have a magazine, right?
Right.
And she's handing me Stern, which means star, which is basically the Time magazine. Now, kids, a magazine was something that was printed on paper.
Paper.
You may not recall this.
You got
anyhow,
them in,
it has staples
in
the middle. And she handed me this magazine, which is just like Time magazine. But since it's Germany, there's a naked woman on the cover.
Right.
And
your grandmother.
I remember, I'm like 15 or 20, and my grandmother's handed me a magazine with a naked woman on the cover. And I just was like, I don't know what to say.
I hope I'm
so
like a European grandmother. I like that.
What meant nothing to her. It wasn't like she thought about it like maybe I shouldn't do this.
Right.
That's Europe. They're like, they don't have hang-ups about bodies and stuff like that. Yeah, so you want to be a European grandma.
I think that would be good. All right, you guys, before we bring up our storyteller, I did want to mention that, folks, if you happen to be shopping for, let's say, Christmas, and you need to purchase something on Amazon, well, here's a good idea. Head on over to storyworthypodcast.com first, click on our Amazon ad, and then we, in fact, get a little taste of that purchase.
Right. If
and
you want to buy some cheese curds
you
from
can do
the
that.
Lake to Lake Dairy.
Right.
Do
because
that
what happens
Amazon.
Is it keeps the Story Worthy Podcast train rolling. Do you know what I'm saying, Hannes?
Yes, exactly. This is... not yet a money-making enterprise, people. And well, you know what? Help us out.
Well, we've been coming to you guys for over 3 years now, completely free shows, as you know. Over 165 stories are up. Do you know that, Sean?
No, I do not.
Or maybe 170. I don't really do math, but it's a lot.
It's 3 years worth.
That's right. And now, folks, you can get every single episode, if you would like, at storyworthypodcast.com. And while you're there, head on over to the donate button. It's right on the front page.
Yeah, and just ahead and give us money. Let's forget about this pretense of going to Amazon. Just give us $5. Give us $10.
Well, we do have a new PayPal monthly donation button. And boy, guys, if you get involved in that, we sure would appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, you can give us $5 a month. I mean, don't we entertain you? Are you not entertained?
All right, folks, wherever you are, stay tuned because Mike Siegel is on his way here. I want to talk a little bit about one of our sponsors, Beso.com. You know, Beso now has a free app.
Yeah, I know that. It's awesome because it eliminates the part of shopping that I hate, leaving my house.
On the Beso app, you guys, you can shop for tens of millions of products from thousands of stores and brands, all in one simple app.
Yeah, it's a boredom buster. You can use it in line for coffee, or if you're in the post office, you can just scroll through and, see what Beso's recommending for you.
Exactly. And then you can tell Beso, you know, your personal style persona, you know, like classic or preppy, rocker, and then they'll do the searching for you. It's amazing.
I think my fiance is probably a romantic feminine.
Which is why she probably would like to get married someday, Hannes.
That would be... Anyhow, I know I can get her great gifts at Beso.com.
Nice way to turn it around. All right, you guys, download the free app right now at Beso.com.
Hi, it's Naomi Pepper from American Horror Story Asylum. Ride with us on Storyworthy.
And we're back. We've gotten in the mobile van. We had some great blueberry pancakes over it. And unfortunately, we told the grandma who runs Grandma's USF Cafe that we have like blueberry pancakes. So now she will never stop making those for us. That's all she's going to do.
Well, and they're better than a ginger snaps.
Yes, we've driven a couple of miles and we're now in Port Washington, Wisconsin, overlooking Lake Michigan.
Okay, and we're going to find out if Mike Siegel, he was born there and then he went to Chicago or something's happening.
We'll figure it out.
It's all in the Midwest. How different can it be?
Oh, see, now you can't be. Now, see, he's rolling his eyes because he's considers himself a Chicago.
Well, all you really care about is he like the Packers or the Bears, right? That's what you're thinking about.
Well, he must like the Bears. So, you know what? I'm leaving. I can't talk to this guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Siegel is here right now. He is a comedian and a TV host. You've seen him on TBS and HGTV. And right now, he is the host and the creator of the Travel Tales podcast, which I know is about traveling. He has different guests on every
really?
Week.
Really? Are you sure?
Here's their tales about traveling. You know, this is actually such a simple concept. I can't believe I haven't been listening.
Stolen
to,
it? No.
No, I haven't been listening to travel podcasts because I'm interested in traveling. I mean,
yeah, you would think so. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
All right, you guys, you can find him at TravelTalesPodcast.com or on Twitter at Funny Mike. Wherever you are, folks, put your hands together for Mike Siegel.
I always felt that the people who got into the show business either came from one or two camps. One, that you were brought up with a ton of attention, that everybody said, oh, get up and do a show. We love you. Or you got no praise as a child, which I was always in the second camp. My parents were scientists. They were good people, but just emotionally very cold. We didn't get a lot of compliments growing up. So I found that later in therapy, that's one of the reasons why it draws people to stand in front of a room full of strangers and get their approval to feel better about yourself. So... there's a moment there. I went through college, and I started doing stand-up about a year after that. And it was very not like my past. I didn't come from a performing background. I was a newspaper writer, and the thought of performing was just the most scariest thing for me ever. So I did it, and I started a few years after that doing it full-time professionally on the road. And my parents never said anything about it. They kind of just thought it was interesting. That they came to a couple shows in Chicago, but that was it. Yeah. And fast forward to a few years of doing it, I'm on the road full time, and my dad is now living in Florida with my grandmother, his mother at the time. And my parents are very weird. They had the old, half Jewish, half Catholic thing. My dad was the Jewish side, my mom was the Catholic side. And so they're living in this condo complex after my grandfather died. My dad goes down there, and my parents never said that they were separated. My dad just went down there one day, and to quote unquote, take care of my grandmother, and just never came back. And it was never discussed. It was never, you know, because that would have meant talking about real things and feelings. And no, that didn't happen. So, but we all got together at holidays. It was just a very weird situation. But in true to my family, we'd never talked about any of it. It was just like, that's the way it was. So to get down to Florida, I would have had to, I didn't have much money at the time, so I booked a gig down there. And the closest thing to where they were was a club called Uncle Funny's in Davie, Florida, which is the worst name ever for a, and there's a lot of bad ones out there, but that was one of them, the name-wise. It was, and just like everything else in Florida, it was in a strip mall. It was, you know, just colorless. Yeah. And so I go down there. And I'm coming down there, and I'm middling at this thing. So I'm probably making about $500, but it's covering the flight and whatever. And I'm staying with my dad and grandmother. And my grandparents, I would see them growing up maybe once a year, if that much, because they lived in Florida, or and we just never saw them. And so I just knew them as old people. And there's a moment in your life when you, I think in your 20s usually, when you see your parents as other adults and not just these mythic figures, you know, that they're, oh, he's just a guy. You know, but I never realized there's a reason that my parents grew up the way they did and raised us the way they did. And it never dawned on me until I go down there and I tell my dad, I'm coming down there and playing this club. And he says, your grandmother wants to come. I went, oh, God, no, no, Dad, she's this is just bad. Some people just don't belong in a nightclub setting. And this 83-year-old Jewish lady who's probably the only comedian she ever saw was probably in the Catskills in the 50s, and it was like Henny Youngman or something, you know. And forget it. I mean, it just, and no, they insist. And they is not only my grandmother, but my two great aunts, Eva and Elaine. So these three 80-year-old women want to come to my show. Oh, Dad, really? They, you can't talk them out of it? No, they're insisting. I went, okay, fine. And you, if you describe the condo place where they all lived, it was really, if you saw Seinfeld's parents, it really was that. Everybody, they were all from Jersey or New York, and they all know each other's business and whatever. So I get down there, and it's a Wednesday through Saturday club, and I do the Wednesday show, and it's actually not bad. And I'm working with this guy, Jeff Allen, who was clean, thank God. Yeah. And because if he wasn't, then I really would have put my foot down. And so they're coming to the Thursday show, and I'm just nervous the whole time. And so Thursday comes around, they show up, and it's one of those times where the waitresses just kind of waive the two-drink minimum because they don't, you know, like, ma'am, it's a two-drink minimum. What? Just, what do you want, juice? I'll bring that, you know. They haven't had a drink in 30 years. So they're sitting there, and they're sitting through the whole thing, and this local MC goes up, and he's not very good. And, of course, it's the one show that week with a heckler. And this old, this lady in the back, drunk, yelling stuff out, and I just, oh, no, not tonight. Not tonight. And so I go up, and of course she starts mouthing off, and now I got to take care of her, but I'm trying to be squeaky clean in front of my family, and somehow I handle it, take care of her, she shuts up, and I get through my half hour set, and I come off stage, and the headliner, Jeff, and the owner are in the back by the bar just cracking up, and I go, what's so funny? And they said, you did the entire show facing one half of the crowd, like the left-hand side of the room, because every time I would just like turn to where that my family was sitting, I would just see these three old ladies just staring a hole through me, not laughing, and then these big Coke bottle glasses, these giant eyeballs, just, and I just went, nope, moving over to that side, back to that. And I did the whole show that way. Didn't even realize it. So Jeff goes up, finishes, and so now the show, it's over, finally. It's like 9:30, 10 o'clock, which is later than they've ever been up in 20 years. And so I'm waiting in the back of the room, and I'm thinking, well, this went okay. I had an okay set. I didn't chew it, but I had an okay set. But it's your grandmother. So I'm figuring she's going to, no matter how bad I did, your grandmother's going to come up and say, oh, you were great. It was the best ever. And I'm waiting in the back of the room, and my grandmother slowly comes waddling up to me. And I go, well, here we go. Okay, waiting to get that praise, you know? And I said, so, Grandma, how did you like the show? Did you have a good time? And there was a pause, and she looked at me and just went, the seats were a little hard. And I went, okay, good. Well, I guess that's it then. Thank you so much. Have a safe, oh, wow. Seats. And then it was at that moment that my dad made complete sense. Like, this was how he was raised. And with us, that he did the best he could. Like, and I found out later on that he was really neglected as a kid. And so he was at least around for us physically, but he just, you know, it's still the emotional thing, and the praise just never got that part of it. Yeah. But then my dad made sense, my mom made sense, and it all started to make sense. And the capper of the story is they finally get in the car and leave, and I'm waving at them away, you know, with, okay, bye, thank you for coming. And on the way out, she reaches into her bag and gives me a card in an envelope. And my birthday was about a month earlier. She said, oh, I forgot to give you this for your birthday. I said, oh, thank you, and I wave as they leave. And then as I open it up, there's a card, and it's just a basic card, and there's a check in it. I said, well, this smooths things out, really, a check. And I noticed that the check is made out to a really weird amount. It's like $28.27. And I look at it, and it's made out to Atlantic Bell Telephone. And I said, that's just perfect. Like somewhere, there's a guy at Atlantic Bell opening up my birthday check. And that was it.
So you really, you broke it down, like all the clarity of your childhood, all the questions you had about why were there never any conversations or why was there no communication, and then you could break it down into that one sentence.
I think growing up, I mean, you never know your family's any different until you start to get a little older. You just figure every other family's kind of like yours.
Right. Yeah.
And then I got a little older and realized, you know, I saw brothers and sisters who loved hanging out with one another and they like had fun and...
Yeah,
you
know, I don't know what the fuck these people are doing.
Affectionate to one another.
So her sentence was the chair was hard. That was her whole comment.
Yeah, not good
and
job.
It's not even a fake good job. I mean, it's funny now that we're sitting here, but that is so freaking hurtful.
It was hard, yeah.
Because tell us what those emotions are that you're feeling right then. When somebody is so clearly not where your head and their head is so clearly not in the same place.
Yeah, I mean... I think the praise from my dad would have meant more just because he was closer to me, and which was never that close, but you really want, I think, a father and son thing as well. Yeah. You really want your dad to...
Well, yeah, and there is...
He didn't say anything.
As I've said a million times, there is a Midwestern thing where people don't... Expressing emotion is far from our strong suit.
Yeah, my parents were East Coast people, so we were the only ones. Like he moved away to get away from his family was one of the things.
Yeah,
we were the only ones in the Midwest.
What he was doing with you, which was actually acknowledging that you existed, if not constantly praising you, was to him a gigantic step
forward. From what he got.
And like I am being a great parent because
he was
not
even there.
Yeah, that I'm there and I'm like there every day. And it's like, it's amazing to me how often our parents or maybe their parents were just not that interested.
Yeah.
In children.
Well, my father
parents are just not. Yeah.
My father still says, you know, when you kids were growing up, children were seen but never heard. He thinks that's sort of funny and that's the way it should be. That you see the child, but you don't hear the child.
Yeah. You know, and it's like I'm providing, food and shelter.
My job is done here.
Right. I'm done. Right. Now get out of the way of the TV or come in here, change the channel on the TV because I don't have a remote because it's 1936.
Right, which is, I think, one of the reasons he left down to Florida. And he had some bad health issues, and you know, I think the winter was killing him also. But by the time he left, we were all away at school, or I think my brother had even graduated by then.
Right.
And so it was kind of like, you know, we saved for their college. We worked. Yeah. And my work here is done.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
What did your aunt say anything to you that night?
One or two of them said, you know, oh, you did a lovely job. And then I found out later, after my grandmother died, my aunt, who was my dad's youngest sister, said to me, oh, she always used to say she went and saw your show that you had a nice white shirt on.
Oh, isn't that cute? So that's what she took away from it.
Yeah, because the MC was dressed weird,
that,
you know,
was more
like
than she could give you.
Outfit.
She couldn't go, well, you looked wonderful.
Or she said you were funny, that you were,
just lie. They can't lie, these people.
Well, but I don't even know if they think if they say you were really funny, if that's even a compliment. I mean, then I don't think they have the words to know even what to say.
Just wonderful. Oh, wonderful.
You had a great show. That's that was so nice to see you. Something like that.
Well, I can remember my mother actually finally seeing me. Like, I remember, so I was in Madison, Wisconsin, at University of Wisconsin. We're doing stand-up, right? And so we book a road gig at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, where I had actually been, and it was right in my old neighborhood. And my mother is currently attending in order to forestall her student loans and working at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. So she and her friend – come down and they see us in the ballroom of the Union. And I see that she's in the back of the room. And it's like, I don't recall any actual compliment. Any actual, like,
right.
That was great. It was like,
were you able to make contact during the show with him?
No, I mean, we're doing the show. I didn't talk to her during the show, but I could, you know.
I know, but like Mike couldn't even look at his grandmother.
I would sneak glances, and then I would just.
Yeah, that didn't bother me that much.
Them but being,
I had one. My Aunt Elaine was given a little laughter, but I think, honestly, at that point, I think maybe they probably heard half of it. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
I mean,
it's too much.
It's moving too fast.
It's overload.
Or the references or whatever it is. You know?
Right.
They got the jokes because a lot when you're starting out, a lot of your jokes are about your family anyway.
Yeah.
So they got the stuff about my dad. I would make fun of him.
Right.
My dad actually got a kick out of that, I think.
You still do stand-up, don't you?
Yeah. I'm not on the road like I used to be.
Yeah, because you used to do colleges and stuff, like hour-long gigs.
And we were talking about Wisconsin. I did every town in Wisconsin, I think.
Did you do the colleges where you have to do the nooners?
And I did a nooner at UW-Milwaukee.
You're in the cafeteria and how hard is that?
Well, you're basically bothering people while they eat. I mean, they didn't sign up for it.
Yeah.
And comedy should be elective.
Voluntary, yes.
That's right. You can't force it on people who don't want it. You know?
Right. I know. That's the thing where it's like when we're doing these coffee houses, it's like I'm getting back into stand-up, and it's like there's a guy with a laptop, and he's looking at you like, I came here for the coffee and the free Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
I'm trying to write my thesis or look like I'm writing my thesis. Why are you bothering me with jokes?
I remember about 10 years ago, they tried to get comedians to go into jury duty, you know, in downtown in the Superior Court building and entertain the people who had to be there all day waiting to get called on a jury. Yeah. Those people don't want comedy. No. They're not there for that.
During the 80s, when they were putting stand-up everywhere, there was guys who were doing it on planes. I knew guys that did it on a bus. New York to Atlantic City. They had them tell jokes on a bus.
Did you ever do, here in L.A., the famous laundromat
I didn't
show?
Do the laundromat, no.
On Sunset.
Christine and I both did the laundromat show.
Did you do traffic school?
I didn't do the traffic
school. I taught traffic school, yeah, sure. Oh, yeah,
and
sure.
And she would bring in comics to, like, kill time. And those people were a little better because it's like, well, they can listen to Christine talk about stop signs or they can
listen to Hannes talk about red lights.
Well, yeah, the best nooner story is, like, for college, I did one way up in northern Wisconsin, Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I can't remember. It was, like, some Catholic college or something.
Oh, yeah.
And they had me in the cafeteria as well, and they ran the sound system through the speaker of the cafeteria.
So that while they're like calling the out the food orders.
Would cut out my mic.
So you would hear awesome. Like,
bring me here, number 37, your fries are ready. And like, oh.
Back to the comedy of Mike Siegel.
Brutal.
Okay, Mike, I know that you have done a lot of different things in L.A. because you've been like a stand-up and then you've been a host and then you've done some acting.
Yeah.
And I heard you on another show talking about this one role you got as an astronaut. And then their complaint about you on the role, about why they didn't want you in that role anymore. Can you just tell the audience out there about that story? Because it really encapsulates Hollywood and how crazy it is out here.
So I got a cast in a pilot, which was a big deal. I had a deal with NBC development that when they were handing out those deals.
A development deal, which would be in other words, to try to hold you for a certain period of time.
But they never developed anything, basically.
Right,
they basically
so that
kept
sucks.
You under contract and you couldn't work for anybody else. And they tried to plug you into whatever thing they had in development, basically.
Right.
And it never, I did a pilot and that never went. And then, but this one was for a different network. I think it was for Fox. And it was a show about astronauts in training at NASA. And there was like the scientists versus the pilots.
Okay.
And the pilots were these things. So they cast me as the lead guy as a scientist.
Okay.
Someone who can go toe to toe with these crazy jock flyboys.
Yeah.
And so we did the table read. I remember being in it, the guy from Scrubs, mm-hmm. the African American guy.
Oh, okay.
From Scrubs
Dorian,
was in it.
What the hell is that guy's name?
Yeah. And actually, Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad was in it.
Yeah.
And a few other people. And it was a big deal. And we did this table read, and they gave it. I got it like on a Thursday. We did the table read on a Friday. They sent us home. It's like, look, the network has all these notes, and we'll just call you tomorrow because the script's going to change anyway. We went, great. And then my girlfriend at the time was taking me out to dinner, big celebratory thing.
Yeah, you booked a pilot. Yes. It's exciting.
So I'm in the shower, and the phone rings. It's the producers.
Okay.
Oh, great.
Hello.
Like in a towel, dripping. Hi, what's up? Just wanted to say I'm sorry. Why? Oh, nobody called you?
No.
They're recasting the entire thing, yeah. and half the cast is gone, and they wanted someone who looked more like an astronaut. And I was like, no, they decided, this is it. They said, you look too much like an astronaut.
Yes.
I said, to play the astronaut role? Yeah, you look too much like an astronaut. So the network felt you looked...
Were they thinking about a famous astronaut or something? Just in general,
no. you're
just
Mike too does look like an astronaut. He's the classically good-looking guy.
Good-looking, clean, cut.
Well, you were playing the scientist who went up against the astronauts.
As they said, they wanted some
more
character.
You weren't nerdy enough, but then why didn't they just have you play one of the astronauts if they think you look like
an
astronaut?
Or they saw how I looked throughout the entire, like, ten auditions.
So it's really frustrating, isn't it, Mike? Because you're out here and things come so quickly, but then they go so quickly. And you don't really know... you know, how fast you can get dropped.
My ultimate Hollywood story is the biggest film I was ever in was this movie, Traffic, with Michael Douglas and Catherine. It was a big deal, and I had like two lines in the movie. It won, so it comes out, it's a big deal.
It was the Academy Award winner.
Yeah, and I got something in the mail. It was before the Academy Awards. It was from the SAG Awards, because it won the SAG Award for Best Ensemble, and I got a nice certificate, suitable for framing. It's like, great. And 2 weeks later, I get another envelope from SAG, and I'm thinking, well, the Oscars are coming up. Maybe this is about the Oscars. And I open it up, and it was them informing me that they're canceling my health insurance.
Wow.
Because I didn't make enough for that year to qualify for the health insurance. Yeah. So it's like, you know, they shake your hand and kick you in the nuts in the same fluid motion.
You reminded me of two stories.
Welcome to Hollywood.
Okay, I got one. One is just me, which is I never got close enough to the table read of a pilot, but I was supposed to audition for a pilot, which was about a guy who was a mall cop. Now, this just so happened to be auditioning at the same summer that Paul Blart Mall Cop came out, and I was like, well, that'll be interesting. Well, people will think it's, you know, it's like, you know, and it's like, I have the audition, 90 minutes. I go to Brian Reese, our acting coach.
Oh, I know Brian
Reese. I go through, you know, I pay him to help me get ready for this audition. Not the day before, 90 minutes before the audition, my manager calls me and says, they just canceled the whole thing. Like, apparently they were like, well, they're going to think they're imitating Paul Blart or what. The thing never got made.
Yeah, so there was a production, then there wasn't a production.
I looked it up. You know, it was a real thing. I was like, this is great. This will just be a great experience. That day, right up until an hour and a half before, they're like, yeah. You know what? No.
Okay, so here's what we know. I mean, we know that Hollywood is full of, you know, disappointment, and then there's these highs and these lows. But really, if you think you're going to sit around and wait to get cast, or somebody's going to choose you and pull you along, you're going to be waiting perhaps forever.
Yeah.
So then we make podcasts, don't we?
Exactly.
Because then you say, I'm going to take some control, and I'm going to make something happen and create, and then continue and do it myself.
Yes. All right, we're going to create we're going to have a webisode, a video thing on YouTube where you play an astronaut. All right. You wanted to be an astronaut. NASA wouldn't take you because you look too much like an astronaut.
That's exactly the whole premise
of the show.
All right. So you come up with the Travel Tales podcast. So tell us about Travel Tales.
So for about 9 years, I hosted this show on TBS. It was a movie interstitial called TBS Movie Extra. And it was it was weekly, but I had breaks in between. And when I started...
9 years. That's a hell of a run.
Long time.
That's so fortunate.
Yeah, Christine, yours was 3 years?
I did Ready for the Weekend, but it was just 2 years.
2 years. Okay.
Paul Gilmartin did Dinner for like
16 years, yeah.
Yeah, and Jesus. Annabelle, too.
Yeah.
So you had 9 years on the travel show. That's great.
On the TBS Movie Extra.
Oh, it was TBS Movie Extra.
I did a lot of like celebrity interviews, Hollywood news, and Extra, actually, the show.
I see.
The last 7 years.
So it was more of a red carpet show.
Yeah.
Okay.
All that stuff. And we would just basically promote upcoming new movies coming out. So a lot of celebrity interviews, a lot of press junkets and that kind of stuff. And it was great. But I got a lot of breaks and I finally had some money to travel. And it's my favorite thing to do. So I would take these little 10-week trips, 3 weeks over the holidays, this, that, and that. And,
a 10-week trip?
Or 10-day trip.
10-day trips.
And like 3 weeks I would have around the holidays off, and I would try to leave the country whenever possible. And that kind of, and when your family's not close, you don't feel
burdened
to go back home for the holidays, which leads a lot of time open. So I always said when it ended, I was going to take a big trip. So I ended up, when it finally ended a couple years ago, I took a 3-month trip kind of around the world backpacking. And
what are you, a European now? All of a sudden you just leave? You can't do that.
Exactly.
You look too much like a European. You can't.
Like these Australians. They just leave. They just go on a walkabout. They leave for a long time. 3 months, 6 months, a year.
But I think it's really, I mean, it's encouraged travel in most countries and not so much in America, you know.
I know that's a weird American thing where it's like it's un-American to leave America because if you want to see mountains, we got mountains. That's okay, not the point.
There's a xenophobia of like if I like something in another country, that somehow means
you
I hate
America.
America.
I know.
No, I can like both.
Okay,
it's
but then what? So then you're traveling and then what?
Yeah, I just started meeting all these people around the world and I loved meeting other people who travel a lot and find out where they went and where they've been. And so I figured, well, this is my.
So this
thing,
is your vehicle.
You know,
so how many
like
shows
it.
Have you
and
produced?
And I would love to host a travel show at some point someday. So it was just,
how many shows have you produced?
For the travel show, we're up to about 90.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, yeah.
And so where are some of the people, you know, when you choose a guest, is it where because of where they've been or what their experience is or how are you?
At first it was, you go through all your friends, you know, first you get a lot of comics and stuff
and then
like
only
that.
People who have gone to Mexico. No, only people who've traveled to Iceland.
You don't Mexico and Canada anymore.
Right. And you have 35 in a row on Tijuana.
Yeah.
And that was a little.
Yeah. How do you choose?
Just if they. A, they have to like talking about it, as you know, like discussing where they've been. But if they've been somewhere that I haven't, which is always a good thing. But if they're just extensively, they've been around the world a bit. And it's not just performers. There's producers that I've worked with. There's people that I've met on the road. I've recorded podcasts with in Vietnam. I've recorded them in Budapest. I've recorded all over.
Do you take your own equipment?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what do you
just
take?
Just a handheld thing.
Just a handheld thing.
On the road, but... You know, at home I record with stuff like this.
And what do you want to, these people to tell you a story about it, or do you want them to give you a travelogue of it?
No. Just interesting things that have happened.
Like a snapshot in time.
Yeah, everybody has something about they've gotten food poisoning somewhere. They've lost their luggage. They've been pulled over by border police. They've done, you know, something. But also to describe places that maybe nobody's ever heard of. And kind of like promote this idea that we should get around a little bit.
No, I love this idea of a travel podcast, and maybe there's more, but I haven't, I don't know why I haven't been listening to them, but I know I like yours.
I'd love to have you on because
I'd love to.
Like someone like you, there's a couple of my friends who have been, you were a flight attendant, right?
And I was in the Peace Corps, so there you go.
So that would be great.
I got a lot of travel stories.
Flight attendants have great stories.
Yeah, I do.
I've been to Europe. I just like to say.
Okay, so.
I'd like to talk to your German mother.
Honestly, let's talk real quick then about what's your favorite place you've ever been. Boom, go.
Oh, that's the hardest.
I know because I know you're going to say it depends on the experience, but really, could go back today, like I would go back to, boom.
Yeah, there's a wormhole opened up right here in the studio.
I would go to Zermatt. How about you, Hannes?
Zermatt?
I would
go to Paris.
I do love Paris.
Yeah, anywhere in Italy and probably, or Thailand.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah.
Now, see, those seem like two very different places
They are.
Because
Italy,
in Thailand,
it's hard to go wrong.
Right.
Italy for pasta and Thailand for child
but
problems.
Italy,
you tell I like food?
Yeah.
Both those places?
No, you look so much like an astronaut. You look like all you do
but
is
Italy,
drink Tang.
I go with the Tang.
Italy
then,
is so easy, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's a well-traveled
path. Italy's a fail-safe and everybody loves
it. Right.
I
mean, so, but Thailand, I mean, now you're getting into, let me just say this. When I went to Thailand, I had to learn one sentence, and that sentence was Thuang Dong, which means... I got splashed by that filthy, dirty river and then got, you know, dysentery, you know, completely.
Did you?
Sick, 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 sick. Yeah, man.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and so I have diarrhea.
Wait, Thuang Dong means what?
I have diarrhea.
Oh, okay.
And I had, because I had to get medicine, you know, I was so sick. Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
So, I mean, when you go into Thailand, I mean, that's, you know.
Well, see, that's the difference. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I mean, I've gotten to a point where it's like I don't want everything done for me. I mean, I don't rough it like I used to. I mean, in my 20s, I would stay in youth hostels and things like that.
Right.
It's like I'm past that age.
Right.
So, but I still like to just wander off the beaten path a little bit.
Do you like Bear Grylls?
Oh, no, I'm not
Bear Grylls.
I'm not dropping myself into a woods.
Yeah, he drops himself on a glacier with a flashlight and a roll of tape. And
but you know, it's like that old Sam Kinison bit about shooting the commercial about the kid who's starving in the mud hole. It's like, I'm sure the crew could give him a sandwich.
Yeah.
You know, he's got like 45 people with the thing. He's like, I'm drinking bear urine.
Right, right.
I think they have Gatorade over at the snack table.
Yeah,
could you go
perhaps.
Over there? But I was going to say about traveling. So you guys are travelers of like mind, which is you want to go somewhere different, weird, and exotic.
I have a curiosity.
And I'm not done with traveling to places that are incredibly comfortable. Like, I've only been to Paris 4 days, and it was so incredibly Paris-y.
It is.
That's why I go back. It's like Paris is a place where you're like, this will never live up to every movie with Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire that I've ever seen, and you go there and it's exactly like that.
And it does live
you're
up
like,
to
how
it.
The it fuck is it exactly place. Like
okay,
a movie
so
from the
Okay, so where
50s?
Would you never go back to, Mike?
Go back to, on my list, I would go back, but it's really not high on it, is India.
India.
Only for the fact that I really got sick. So, and I have a pretty strong stomach, and India took me out.
One time, Robin Quivers, Howard Stern's partner, she wrote a book, and she went over to India. She was going to, I don't know if she was promoting it, or just, she was going on
story,
vacation
yeah.
or something, but she flew into India. They picked her up in the town car, took her to the city center. She looked at the hotel. She said, turn around. Went right back to the airport.
and flew away to Italy or something.
Yeah. And left. And yeah, because of the poverty and the death in the streets.
I've seen, like, pretty... I've been through Cambodia and slums in South Africa, and I've seen some pretty poor places, but India was still the worst that poverty I've ever seen. And the cities, it can be really overwhelming. It's just sensory overload when you get there. I mean, I'm a city guy, and one of the favorite things to do, I like to... Once I get to a new place, I'll throw my bag in the hotel and just take a walk around the block and just kind of get a feel of it. In New Delhi, I think I lasted about 15 minutes before I just went right back to the hotel and just had to be like, whoa... What was
because
that?
What are you, know, you seeing it's with just, your eyes? What are you seeing?
Well, it's not just, first of all, just the sound, the noise, the smell. There's a, you go to a place with a billion people in the country. It's overwhelming.
Yeah, we don't understand here how big China and India are, how many people there are.
It's overwhelming. And just not this, the chaos on the street. You have cars, trucks, motorbikes,
animals, cows.
People dodging through traffic, cows in the middle of goats, camels pulling carts.
And then you see very sick people.
And then, yeah, I mean, you really see, yeah, beggars. You see things like lepers.
This
is like biblical stuff.
Okay, you know? And then one more question. And then
it's overwhelming.
And then do you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Sure.
Okay, let me ask you one more question first. How about cruises? Do you do the cruise thing? Is that even considered traveling?
It can be. I see the appeal of them. It's not my thing. I like to have a little more freedom in my... If I like
agree.
An island and want to stay longer,
yeah.
I'll stay. If I don't like it, I'll get off.
I have a rum runner anywhere I want. You know what I'm saying?
I saw a half-hour commercial for what I would say the only cruise I would ever consider, which is like a river cruise in Europe.
Yes.
Going like down the Rhine.
Like
I would do a Mediterranean one. Or
yeah, that would be.
Through China?
Yeah, that I would do because you're not just going to port city, which are the same. It's like this is the river. People live there.
Yeah.
It's always going to have history. Any country has always had people always living on their major rivers.
Yeah, but just like floating around the Caribbean and doing that.
Even if it has a zip line, you're not in.
No.
Yeah,
no,
go to Orange County and get a nice hotel and sit by the pool. What's
it's
the
like
point?
Being, stuck in a Vegas hotel that you can't get out of.
All right, you guys. Let's play some Shotgun Storyworthy. It can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Okay, like I said, I did this show TBS Movie Extra where I had a lot of celebrity interviews, and so I'm going to say here, everybody asks who was like the worst interview, and I will say on this one, I told this on stage a couple times, but everybody's pretty nice because it's a pretty controlled environment, you have publicists there, you have to talk about the movie and stuff like that. So I don't know if you saw earlier this year Reese Witherspoon got pulled over by a cop, and she pulled the whole her husband got pulled over and do you know who I am thing and stuff. And people were amazed, like, oh, she seems so sweet. America's sweetheart. And I went, hold on here, because I have a Reese Witherspoon story. And so for my show, we're setting up the cameras. We're in a hotel room in the regular junket, setting up the sound. And so there's this pause and right before we're about to tape, I'm sitting with her and I said, you know, Miss Witherspoon, I've never met you before, but one of my favorite movies of the last 15 years was Election, and I thought you were incredible in it, and I didn't know who you were at the time, but I always said if I ever met that actress, I would say how great she was in that. So I always wanted to tell you that. And she just paused and went, oh, now you have.
God damn it. Can
what?
You believe that? That is unbelievable.
Yeah. And I was like, okay. I'm just kind of like stunned. The sound guy's like, because he heard it in his mind.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, I think the proper response there is, thank you.
Wow, yeah. That's a good
story.
Isn't
that what 99%
Mike,
of the
that really
human
bums me out because I love elections so much.
Yes.
And I think of Tracy Flick jumping in the hallway when she's like on a pogo stick and she's so excited. And she just was the best thing ever. For like a decade, that was my favorite movie. And then she wasn't kind.
So I had been saying that story for about 4 years just amongst friends.
Yeah.
And then this thing happens. People are like all surprised. And I went,
you know what? Yeah.
No. Finally.
Just, see, amazing. Yeah.
My story has validity.
That's too bad, man. I never saw her like that either. I always thought she would be very warm and down to earth.
See, I always wonder, sometimes people are, I think very famous actors are one of two things, either the exact opposite of their screen persona or they are exactly their screen persona. And it's like Tom Hanks is probably
the nicest guy in the world.
Exactly as nice as you think he is.
Steve Carell, nicest guy.
Steve Carell, I'm trying to think. Maybe Steven Seagal is probably just exactly as much of a dick as you think he is. But maybe there are people, there might be people who are like, well, they always say like, you know, people who professionally play assholes, like character actors who are always like the heavy. They're always the bad guy. They're always the bad boss. They're always the principal. And like, they're always like, oh, these are the sweetest guys you've ever met.
Oh, yeah, like Steve Buscemi or Joe Pesci, those guys.
Yeah, you know, guys I can't even name. The guy who was the principal in Breakfast Club, who was also in Trading Places. He was like always a complete asshole.
You mess with a bull, you get the horns.
Yes, exactly, that guy.
good one, Mike.
That's good. By the way,
remember that guy? What was his name? Oh, yeah.
I know. He was in everything, and he was also in Die Hard.
Absolutely.
He was the dick commander.
Right.
And it's like, I think that people. I think to be that sweet on camera, you almost have to be like covering a complete self.
I don't know.
I mean, some actors are just uncomfortable being themselves. You know, interviewing someone who was a comedian is always the easiest thing because they can be funny. They're very comfortable talking about whatever.
Right.
You can
throw them a curveball and they go with it.
They don't mind looking like an asshole.
Yeah. They can make fun of themselves.
At heart, they think that they are assholes.
Exactly. Yeah. No, we definitely find that on Storyworthy. Yeah. The comedians, we book mostly comedians because they do know how to tell the story, stop the story, move on.
But some actors are just not. Like Robert De Niro is a very hard interview. I mean, that's why you don't see him on too many.
Right. You watch him at Saturday Night Live.
He doesn't have a ton
of
personality.
Very nice. He's supposed to be a very sophisticated man. He's not really this like rough guy. He's a very
but okay.
Any other
interview.
Any others celebrities that you did really enjoy being with?
That I did enjoy.
Yeah, I mean,
Someone like Emma Thompson, I could talk to forever.
Oh, how nice!
She was just really smart and really funny. She could do Shakespeare, and then you could tell her a dirty joke.
One time, I got to interview John Travolta, and he was amazing.
I heard that about
super
him,
kind. Gave me a big hug. It was awesome.
Yeah,
and the most interesting thing about that, and this is not even a negative, but it's like. He had three people for his hair.
Yeah.
And he was obsessed with his hair, and he would go and look on the monitor. But I admire this in a way. It's like,
it's his
this
business.
Is important to me,
yeah.
And I'm not just going to present. Like, I remember seeing, was it Talking Bad after Breaking Bad?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Anna Gunn was on there, who plays Skylar. And I like her a lot, and I think she's really attractive. But she happened to, her hair was like, she was against a black background, and it was just like little hairs were poking out all over the place. And I thought to myself, you're a pro. Like,
she didn't have hair and makeup,
I understand. So why weren't there hair up makeup?
Well, but she wasn't. It wasn't like a John Travolta thing where she was being interviewed. Well, I don't know.
But she was being interviewed. I'm saying she was going to go on camera.
I don't know if you've seen Travolta's head lately, but I don't know what's happening. It's like
not
spray painted
on.
This is before that night, too.
They were painting his hair on. They had a palette with colors.
They did?
And they were painting it on. Yeah, and that's what he was looking for. So he has more specificities.
I interviewed Nicolas Cage. I couldn't stop looking at his head.
I didn't know what was going on.
Oh, really?
Up top there. It was like a weird, yeah.
See, now I think he could be, he's like a guy, he could just friggin' shave his head. He'd still be Nicolas Cage, and like not people would not be like, oh, well, I don't want to watch Nicolas. I'd watch him more.
Well, let's get him on the show.
Okay.
We share the same birthday. I'm sure that'll get him on.
Yeah, that'll get him on.
All right,
saw
you
some
guys.
Bad facelifts, too, up close.
Oh, wow.
Really? That's
I bet, yeah. People don't want to age gracefully, do they?
No.
No, they want to stop that process.
Why do they never look at Sean Connery and Helen Mirren and just go, I want to be 65 years old and either smoking hot or look like I can still kick your ass?
Yeah, and then it's there's like, Burt Reynolds.
Look, doesn't look good.
Doesn't look like a human being anymore.
Huh, no. That's too bad. Yeah, all right, so Travel Tales Podcast, that's where
TravelTalesPodcast.com.
Yeah, really entertaining. I'm so glad to have you
we'll
on.
Get you
Thank
on
you.
There.
I'd love that. And real quick, is your grandmother alive or dead now?
No, they're all dead.
Fuck them all.
My dad, too.
No, kidding.
Oh, see where that hatred gets you?
Oh, no.
Eats you alive. Let your emotions out,
standing at the gravestone.
People.
Why didn't you hug me?
It's okay to love.
All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up. I'd like to thank Sean Merrick here at Sideshow Network for helping us each and every week.
His hair is completely real.
And, of course, Jorge Reyes. And, you know, John Thomas Griffith, Hannes, he's the guy that wrote our theme song, Follow Me.
Yes, he wears a toupee. That looks exactly like Nicolas Cage's face.
He does not. He wears a baseball cap, actually.
All right, giveaway.
You guys. On behalf of our storyteller tonight, Mike Siegel, and of course you, Hannes Finney, dear friend, and
I have almost no hair left.
And co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.